ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As we get older, our bodies start to fail us, don't they? Aching knees and failing eyesight. Backs that complain more than they used to. Sometimes our memory fails us too. And for most of us, that's just part of aging. For others, it can be something more serious, dementia. Not being able to remember things does not mean you have dementia. It's an umbrella term for a decline in a whole range of cognitive abilities that's severe enough to affect daily life. And figures released last year by Dementia Australia show it's a whole lot more common than people realise. Figures from Dementia Australia show more than 446,000 Australians are currently living with the condition, and they say it will nearly double by 2054. A women's health organisation, Jean Hales, adds another striking finding. Dementia is the number one killer of women in Australia. In fact, it's now the number one cause of death in all Australians, not just women. Survey also revealed that out of the 3,000 women surveyed, less than half knew that a healthy lifestyle could reduce their risk of Alzheimer's or vascular dementia. So it's not inevitable. A landmark Lancet review identified 14 modifiable risk factors, including high cholesterol, social isolation, untreated vision loss, which if addressed might prevent up to 45% of cases worldwide. So to take us through all of this tonight is Professor Henry Bedati, Australia's leading expert in the field. He's a dementia treatment pioneer, co-founder of the Centre for Healthy Brain Ageing, and Australia's Senior Australian of the Year for 2026. As always, I'd love you to participate as well. Call us 1300 800 222. Ask Professor Bedati a question. 1300 800 222, or text on 0467 922 702. Henry, good evening to you. Welcome back tonight, love.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you for inviting me.
It's terrific to have your time and expertise as well. 500,000 Australians living with dementia right now. It's not just memory loss, is it, Henry?
No, it's much more than that. I mean, memory loss is the usual first symptom with people with Alzheimer's disease complain of, a short-term memory loss, not long-term memory. But it can also affect personality. It can affect the ability to, look at me, ability to find words for things.
Henry, don't go, don't lose it on the program now. We can't have it.
Yeah. No, that's right, yeah. It can be people have difficulty following the plot. Like the patient I saw today, is her husband said, look, you know, we can watch television together, but she literally loses the plot. She can't follow the plot of a movie.
Gee, that's a worry. Because I'm just thinking of how many times it's happened to me as well.
Well, some of the movies now, it's quite understandable.
Yes, labyrinthine plots in three-hour-long movies, that's right, to be avoided, I suspect.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there a particular, I suppose the question that everyone wants to know really, Henry, is there a particular moment or a particular set of symptoms where a person should stop and say, you know what, I need to see someone about this. It's not just that I can't remember someone's name at a party, which is normal.
Very, very normal. And I certainly experienced that too. But, and, you know, where you put your keys or where you left your glasses, they're pretty common complaints that people have. When I give a talk to a public audience and I say, who has trouble with people's names, pretty well everyone puts up their hand. Mm. But if the memory is getting worse, if people are noticing, particularly the someone you live with, say, look, I'm really worried about you, or if it's starting to interfere with day-to-day functions, or if it's spreading beyond memory, to having trouble with word finding or getting lost in familiar situations, or just being, everything's much more of an effort. Like one person said, I used to be able to do my tax return in a couple of days and now it takes me weeks. Or one woman, I used to do all the Christmas cards when people used to send cards. But now I just can't organize it anymore. So if organizational skills or other domains of cognition are being affected, not just memory. So if it's other people noticing, if it's getting worse, if it's spreading beyond just one cognition such as memory to other aspects of cognition, And if it's interfering with day-to-day life, any of those things, then go and seek help, mainly from your local GP as a start.
Hmm. Yes, I remember my dear old dad who eventually died of this. I didn't really recognise it at the time, but we were driving back home in separate cars to his own house, not mine, his own house.
Yes.
And he didn't arrive. I got there first, and I was quite worried. Half an hour later, he turned up and he said, "Oh, I got lost on the way." And I'm thinking,
yes.
He didn't live in a big town, you know. I was thinking, how can you get lost? I didn't think about it at the time, but something like that, that's a warning sign, is it?
It is. It's a flag. Yep.
Yeah. If you go to see the GP, what will happen? Because I think a lot of people are very nervous about admitting this, aren't they?
Well, what might happen is the GP say, "Well, you're just getting old. Everyone's got these symptoms. Don't worry about it."
Mm.
But let's hope the GP doesn't do that, because if you're worried enough to see the GP, the GP should take you seriously and actually, you know, check it out. Maybe do a short memory test, takes about 5-10 minutes at the most.
Mm.
There are some reversible causes for dementia, which can be easily checked with a physical examination and blood tests, and that's very easy to do. I never see those people because by the time they get to me, they've usually had those tests.
Mm. What are they? What are they? That's what you say is there are some reversible things, for example.
Yeah, well, things like thyroid deficiency, B12 deficiency. There's something called, there are some infections that can cause dementia. In decades before, it was syphilis.
Mm-hmm.
HIV can cause dementia. I mean, that's not reversible, but that we can have treatments for it. There are also something called normal pressure hydrocephalus, where the fluid that bathes the brain and goes up and down the spinal cord around the brain and through the ventricles, the cavities in the brain, that if the works get gummed up and the fluid can't flow, it can build up a pressure in the brain and squashes the brain against the skull. And that can be cured by putting a shunt into the brain.
Mm-hmm.
If it's done within about a year of symptoms starting, that the longer it's left, the less likely it is to work. In all of these so-called treatable, potentially treatable causes, if they're not treated early, then it may not be able to reverse the cause or even stop it progressing.
Hmm. Professor Henry Bradati is my guest, dementia treatment pioneer in Australia. If you've got questions, 1-300-800-222 is my number. Line's free if you want to grab one. Alison in Brisbane says, "Evening, how is dementia a cause of death? I mentioned at the beginning of the program it was a leading cause of death amongst women. What's the mechanism of that, please?" says Alison.
Yes. Alison asks a good question. So what happens with death certificates? The doctor will write down all the causes leading to the death of that person. So dementia may not be the proximal cause, the immediate cause of death. A person may die of pneumonia, for example, or a heart failure. But dementia will enfeeble the person and make them more likely to get a pneumonia. So it'll appear on the death certificate, but may not be the one that's most immediate cause of death. So it's a slight anomaly to say people die from dementia, they die with dementia.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, my dad's case, as I mentioned, I think in the end he died of pneumonia.
Yeah, pneumonia, sometimes called the old man's friend.
Yeah. Can you tell us, says my texter, about the impact of multiple concussions on Alzheimer's? My wife's had at least 6 concussions thanks to horses. She's in her mid-30s.
Yeah.
In the mid-30s. Yeah. Anything we can do to prevent further risk?
Well,
get off the horse.
Yeah, get off the horse, exactly, yes. But certainly wear a helmet when she's riding. But we know about this from the footballers.
Mm.
You know, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, they have a higher rate of dementia. And if you look at the brains of people who've been in contact sports, they show the damage that's caused by that repeated concussion. So it does increase the risk. And,
it's just a fact now, isn't it? We know this, don't we?
Oh, yes, definitely know it. And there's been some recent studies just in the last week or so I was reading, where they looked at people who'd been concussed and looked at various blood biomarkers for brain damage. So there are various blood tests you can use to see if the nerve cells have been damaged. And what's something called neurofilament light, which is just a non-specific marker in the blood of brain damage, and glial fibrillary acidic protein, that's a measure of inflammation in the brain. Both of those go up after concussion. So it concussion is not good for the brain.
No.
And repeated concussion is bad.
Yeah. What do you say to parents about contact sports these days? I think for a lot of people it's a pretty confronting situation. You think, well, hang on, I do know these things. Doctors tell me, I mean, Professor Bradati's telling me on radio. I heard it last night. Should I, with all strenuous, try not to expose my children to these risks?
Yeah, I think it is. And there are some rules now that children under a certain age shouldn't be playing contact sport where they could get head injuries. And I think that's wise, because younger people are more prone to it, more susceptible to having damage from that. Rugby and other football's codes are so much integral to our culture. Many people play sport and have had contacts and concussions and don't get dementia. So I can't give you a percentage risk, but the more concussions you have, the more likely
it is. One of these many medical things, isn't it? It doesn't cause it in the sense that there is an actual direct correlation, but there's a deep association and correlation with concussion and the condition.
And some people are more resilient to it than others.
Fiona says, my father and his brother and sister died with dementia. Does this mean I'm high risk? So is there a genetic link?
Yeah, there is. So first of all, let's just clarify a few things. So dementia is the umbrella term.
Yeah.
It means, as you started at the top of the program, saying it's cognitive decline interfering with day-to-day function. But there are about 100 causes of dementia. Over 50% is Alzheimer's common. The second most common is problems with circulation in the brain, or vascular dementia. And then the next two are something called Lewy body, which we can go into, which is what Robin Williams had, the comedian and actor, and frontal dementia, which Bruce Willis has now, which can affect either behaviour or language.
We just missed the last one. What was the last one again?
Behaviour or frontotemporal dementia.
Right.
There's two forms. It can affect language, which is what Bruce Willis has, or behaviour, or sometimes both. So when you ask about the genetics, the risk of it, for Alzheimer's disease, if you have a family member with it, an immediate family member, like a parent or a sibling, then your risk increases by about at least twofold. And the younger they have that dementia, that Alzheimer's disease onset, the greater that the risk is. So, look, as adults, between 55 and 95, we have about a 40% chance of developing dementia. Through our lifetime. So we have to put that in context. So if you have parents who develop dementia, let's say around the age of 80, which is about the most common age, and then your risk doubles, your risks before the age of 80 is probably less than 10%. And so doubling that risk, the odds are still good for you. But of course, as we get older, the risk will increase.
I mean, in part, we're seeing more of it because we're living longer, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'm talking to Professor Henry Bradati, Australia's leading dementia treatment researcher and pioneer. If you've got questions, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Ben from Beverly Hills. G'day, Ben.
Hey, John, Phil. Hello, Professor Henry. I just want to make a comment. Phil, as you're probably aware, I drive a heavy vehicle for a living. We've spoken to before. I've got three brothers and a nephew that all do the same. Now, my mother's 88 and still driving, and only just passed a test recently, fit to drive. Yep. Now, we've taken the opinion, me and all the siblings, that we'll let her know when she's not capable anymore. And my comment is, I think we need to change the culture in this country about, you know, elderly people driving. If you take their license away, they lose their freedom, and, you know, the rhetoric that people use. Now, I think we've got to change it to, it's an act of love to let them know that they're not driving anymore because of the dangers, instead of you know, taking away their freedom. Yeah, I don't know what if it's statistically proven otherwise, but there's an over-representation of elderly people confusing brake and throttle in cars when they're getting on. It leads to sometimes tragic circumstances, and that's just one little, you know, snippet of a driving a vehicle that seems to be over-represented with the elderly.
Thanks, Ben. No, thanks, Ben, and good to hear from you again. I mean, it is an issue, isn't it, Henry? And
yes, it is.
You know, I mean,
it is.
One of my texters says a friend in the late 70s was found by a stranger sitting in her car crying at a shopping centre because she'd forgotten how to start the car.
Wow.
A good, a good Samaritan intervened, started the car for her, and then she drove home. But we were speechless when we found that her doctor approved the renewal of her driver's license a few weeks later.
Yeah. So the rules are that once you turn 75, you need to have a medical each year to say that you're fit to drive. I think these are perfunctory. They don't really screen people properly. But when you turn 85, you need to have an on-road test every 2 years. You know, you could argue whether it should be every year rather than every 2 years. But Pete's absolutely right. There are increased risks as people do decline cognitively. Reaction time slows, and it may be people are safe to drive in their local neighbourhood in daylight, but not to drive distances and not to drive at night. And so you have restricted licences. As far as dementia is concerned, you cannot have an unrestricted licence if you have dementia. You have to have an on-road test. Ideally with an occupational therapist, but there's a waiting list and they're quite expensive. It's like about $1,000 to have that test. There are private driving instructors who are licensed to do that testing. That's a lot cheaper, probably a couple of $100. But it's I can't, by doing a test in an office, tell whether someone's safe to drive. You really have to go into the car with them, and I'm not going to do it. But you know, people who are qualified.
Yeah, who's going to do it? That's right. Yeah. That's right. Daniel in Haymarket. G'day, Daniel.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the call.
Pleasure,
Professor. I wanted to just raise the case of Mum. She's 93 years of age and quite frail now. And I've noticed in the last couple of months that short-term memory is becoming clearly evident, lacking some short-term memory periodically. She's very hesitant about going to see doctors and specialists and so forth at this time, and I understand that. But I just wonder, with that very brief description, other than perhaps getting some sort of diagnosis, do you feel that it would benefit her to be, you know, to be tracking back to the doctors and specialists and so forth for this?
Well, I sympathise with you about that. That it can be quite distressing for your mother to go and see a doctor, and confronting to think that she might be losing it. And yes. I think most people know that their cognition is not as good as it was 20 years earlier. At my age, and I'm not nearly 93 yet, but hopefully I'll get there one day. So it's likely that she does know at some level that she isn't as adept as she used to be. Certainly she should see a GP and check the things I mentioned before, you know, a blood test to make sure she's not anemic or that she hasn't had thyroid deficiency. So that's pretty easy to do. There are no cures for most of the dementias. So there are new drugs for Alzheimer's disease, but they're not cures. And in the 90s, probably a third of people over 90 will have dementia. So it's very common. And it's not one type. As we get older, we accumulate multiple pathologies. We may accumulate some Alzheimer pathology in our brain. The circulation may not be as good. And there are other proteins, toxic proteins that can build up in the brain. And pretty well everyone will have some mixed pathology. So it's we used to talk about something called senile dementia, and then we abandoned that term because we were able to define it much more exactly. But now we're finding that there are so many different forms of pathology that build up over time.
And that so you may, the question is, and you may and you may have a number of them at the same time.
You do. That's exactly right. Yeah. The question is, what's her quality of life like? What does she need help with to help her cope day to day? It's not really a medical model. It's more a social model about how to maintain her quality of life and maintain her ability to function independently. So she may need some services to come in and help, and you can get an aged care package to do that, although there's a long wait, and that's a source of contention in the community because people can be waiting a year for some of those packages.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you very much. So GP is the first point.
First step, yeah.
That important point you make about it, really the social dimension of quality of life, and that's
yes.
why I'm getting that also. Well, thank you very much, Professor.
Thanks, Daniel. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Steve from Max Creek. G'day, Steve.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Evening.
My wife is 80, and she's certainly got. She's had dementia for coming on for about last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now we had a horrible tragedy 2 or 3 days ago. We lost our son.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry
to hear that. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's fine. Well, it's not. But, no. And also we've gotten the appointment with the geriatrician in a week. But first of all, how do you think this may affect Julie's condition? She's in a very bad way at the moment. She's very depressed.
You mean breaking the news?
This is our second child that's died.
Yeah. You mean breaking the news to her?
Sorry?
You mean breaking the news to her?
Oh, no, she knows.
Oh, okay.
She's aware.
Right.
She knows what's going on.
Could I just check, how long have you known that she has dementia?
Probably 3 years. She was first.
Okay.
We took her to a geriatrician about 2.5 years ago, and he said no. She passed the test really well, but I mean, it's things like, you know, sort of where's the dishwasher and where's the fridge and all that sort of stuff. It's getting to that stage now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The reason I ask that is because depression can look like dementia. And, if the so-called dementia occurred only after she heard the news.
Oh, no, then, this was only 3 days ago when Jamie died.
Mm.
Yeah.
She's perfectly aware what's happening to her.
Yes.
And that depresses her to begin with, of course.
Of course,
But she's coping with that now. But I'm just wondering if this may just tip her over the edge or what it may do to her condition.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it may make her worse because you have depression on top of dementia and grief like you're both going through, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But you don't have as much in the way of resources to cope with that grief as you would previously. You have a double duty, you know, you're going through your own grief but also needing to support your wife as she goes through that.
Sorry, sad to hear it, Steve, and
Okay.
All the best.
All right.
All the best. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. No, terrible. All right. 1-300-800-222 is the number. The Lancet Commission on Dementia identified 14 modifiable risk factors that, if addressed across a person's lifespan, could potentially prevent or delay nearly 45% of dementia cases worldwide. Now, these were... some of these were modifiable risk factors, which include in early life, less education, in midlife, hearing loss, high cholesterol, depression, traumatic brain injury, physical inactivity, diabetes, smoking, hypertension, obesity, excessive alcohol consumption, in later life, social isolation, air pollution, and visual loss. Some of these might surprise some listeners, but lots of them, by definition, are probably modifiable, aren't they?
But they all are. Yeah. They all are. Air pollution is another one, yeah. And we can avoid concussion, as we talked about. We can certainly not smoke.
Yep.
Alcohol, there's been some debate that maybe some alcohol's okay, but certainly large amounts of alcohol are bad for your brain.
Yep.
Blood pressure is an important one, and we should all get our blood pressure checked and treated. And for every year of treatment, there's a decrease in the risk. So that's quite a strong one.
You really should sit on your blood pressure, shouldn't you? You really should be aware of what it is and keep it within bounds.
That's right. So it used to be said 140 or 90 was the target. You should be below up to that.
Hmm.
But now people are reducing that to 130 and even 120 in one study. And so it's really important to do that. If you're quite old, like, say, over 80 or 85, reducing blood pressure has to be done very gradually because it can be lead to more problems because the blood vessels are stiffer. They're not as flexible. And if you drop the blood pressure too much, that can cause problems too.
Yeah. Yep, 1-300-800-222. My texter says, how is dementia different from my 93-year-old mother's diagnosis, which is age-related cognitive decline?
The difference is if the cognitive decline is interfering with the day-to-day function, she has dementia. The definition is very simple.
Yeah. All right. Julie in Mildura. Hello, Julie.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there any relation with having a pacemaker and anaesthetic? Because my partner, he was 85. We were still bike riding. He could ride a bike 20 Ks. And then it was like flicking a switch. He had the pacemaker put in and then he couldn't even find his way to Bunnings, which he'd been going to, you know, every week. And now he's really in. His mother had it.
Yeah.
But his brother, so he's now 91, his brother, who's 3 years older, doesn't have it. He'd be very healthy. He, you know, he used to walk the dogs 10 Ks a day. Like, yeah, I just... And it didn't really set in until the anaesthetic and the
pacemaker insertion. Mm. Is there any connection here, Henry?
Well, I'm not sure why he had the pacemaker, but there are certain rhythms. Atrial fibrillation, which is where the upper chambers of the heart flutter rather than beating in synchrony with the ventricles, which pumps around the body. Then that leads people to develop clots in the heart, which can go to the brain. So if it's a sudden onset like that, really from one day to the next, then I'd be worried about that there may have been an embolus or clot going to the brain. The pacemaker itself should make him better, should stabilize his flow of blood to the brain. So unless there was and it's a pretty easy operation to do, it's done very commonly. And the anaesthetic as well. The evidence that anaesthetics cause dementia, that there's been quite a lot of controversy about that, with some studies showing that there was a correlation and others showing that there wasn't, when you account for the reason they had the anaesthetic, because people are well oxygenated during anaesthesia, and usually their blood pressure and all their other vitals are well controlled. Hospitalisation itself has been associated with dementia rather than the anaesthetic too.
Yeah, all right, 1-300-800-222. My guest is Professor Henry Bradati.
Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
So just back on these 14 modifiable risk factors, Henry, let's leave aside in early life less education. In midlife, hearing loss, well, you could attend to that. That's right. High cholesterol, you could attend to that. Depression, you could certainly seek treatment for that.
Yes.
Traumatic brain injury, well, that could be difficult. Physical inactivity, well, just get moving. I mean, this is a big thing everywhere, isn't it? Just get moving. Diabetes, well, you know, you need to get on top of that. Smoking, don't smoke. Hypertension, blood pressure, we discussed that. Obesity and excessive alcohol consumption. Tell me about, so these are all modifiable, as you say. In later life, and this would, if you modify these, according to the Lancet Commission on Dementia, this would prevent or delay nearly 45% of dementia cases worldwide. So, you know, this is not tinkering at the margins, is it?
No, that's good. Like with hearing loss, there's now been several studies showing that people who wear hearing aids, particularly if they start earlier, before the age of 70, reduce their risk of dementia or of cognitive decline. Cholesterol, it's just in the last couple of years, we've now got some big studies with a million people in them showing that for in each of these big three studies that were reported, showing that there's a correlation with high cholesterol and dementia, and also other studies showing that people who take the statins for the treatment of it have a reduced risk. So definitely modifiable things we should all do. As far as the exercise is concerned, people always ask me, well, I go for a walk every day. That's probably not enough. If you're walking and having a friendly chat with your neighbour as you go for a walk and stopping for a coffee and so forth, but you haven't got puffed, you haven't got sweaty, it's not going to really do enough.
No.
And the evidence now is it's not just aerobic exercise, also strength or resistance training. If you do the double, both of those things, then that gives you more protection.
Yeah.
And the Australian health guidelines is you should do at least half an hour a day, 5 days a week. But it should be moderate to intensive exercise, and it's better if you do more than half an hour, like more like an hour a day.
This is the thing. I know we've had been we do bang on a bit on the show, that is, exercise is not going for a walk, is it? I mean, anything's better than nothing. But
yes, no, going for a walk's good.
Exactly.
I mean, I do it every day.
Of course, it's good. But the exercise we're talking about is exercise that's purposeful, makes and raises your heart rate.
It does. Yeah, that's good.
Walking doesn't often tend to do that.
Well, yeah, walking up hills, you know, doing some exertion. And you mentioned education being in early life, but we can do education in late life too, and that has benefit. So keeping our brains active, people who are more complex occupations through life have less dementia as well.
Right. I thought there was that the old, you know, do the crossword, solve puzzles thing can stave off dementia. There hadn't been much evidence found for that. Is that still the case, Henry?
That's right, yeah. I mean, I love doing crosswords, particularly cryptics, but I think I enjoy it. My brain's active enough through the day. but it's doing things that are new and stretching your brain, as it were. So, you know, people talk about learning a new language or learning a musical instrument. That's pretty difficult for many people to do. So it's never too late and never too early to do these things. So you mentioned these were different life stages, but it's not a definitive, you know, early life and then it's all over, you can't do more education. Or if you haven't had hearing loss before late life, if you have hearing loss in later life because it was a midlife risk factor, it's not going to matter, it does matter. So you should be looking at these things throughout life, just that the maximal impact is at those times in life.
Yeah. All right. We mentioned high cholesterol. I mean, there are drugs that you can take now, aren't there, which can address
these
things.
Statins.
Statins, exactly.
Yeah.
Which many people, well, I know many doctors think, I don't know what your view about them is that they're some kind of wonder drug in the sense that they generally improve people's health in that they control these risk factors.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
With diabetes, there's a study that I'm involved with that led by Catherine Samaras at the Garvan Institute looking at metformin, which is a treatment for diabetes, as a protective factor against dementia. And there was trials of Ozempic for dementia, which came out at the end of last year. It wasn't successful, but there were some indications that it might have been, and there are still people still looking at that.
Statins reduce dementia risk, says my texter, since when? even my cardiologist admitting statins increase risk. I don't think that's correct, is it?
Well, there was something years ago about statins, thief of memory. There are some people who are sensitive to it,
yeah,
and it can affect their memory while they're taking it. But when they come off it, it reverts back to normal. But the issue with statins was pretty controversial, and for most of the time we thought there was no evidence either way. But in the 2024 Lancet review, they quoted papers which did show a benefit from statins in reducing them. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Bob from Greenacre. G'day, Bob.
G'day there. Look, I used to be a professional boxer.
You did, Bob. Go on.
When I turned 60, I noticed a little twitch in my left arm, and it's 10 years since then, and I'm on Azelect, Matapar and Sifrol. They're the three drugs that they got me on. I notice I'm progressing a little bit now. I've got a bit more of the shakes. It's a little more pronounced. I wondered, is there anything you can – I've got scar tissue at the back part of my brain.
Yes,
They said I'll know what I've got until I'm dead and they do the autopsy.
Well, they're right. To be accurate, that's correct. But it sounds like you've got what's called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and this is a real hazard for boxers. And Muhammad Ali, of course, was the one that you could see. So the drugs you're on are usually the drugs for Parkinson's disease. And he had a lot of Parkinson-type symptoms in his later life. So, unfortunately, these are the sequelae, the results of the damage that you've incurred. I think it's worse for the heavyweight. I don't know what weight you were in, but the heavyweight boxers, they get much bigger hits to their head than the people who are, say, the flyweight or bantamweight.
Yes, I was a light heavyweight.
Light heavyweight, right.
I was renowned for being able to take a punch.
Yeah.
It didn't do me any good. I'm not dirty on it. I love the sport, but I feel sorry about it. But I just wondered, is there anything you can do, anything I can do, or is it just...
I don't think there's anything you can do at this stage to reverse that. What you're trying to do is stop the progression of any of these symptoms. Yes. And the things we're talking about, the prevention of dementia, is good for your health generally anyway. Things like regular exercise, not boxing, of course, regular exercise. And one of the factors not included in that Lancet review was the diet. There's quite a lot of evidence that the Mediterranean-style diet with lots of vegetables, legumes, almonds, walnuts, extra virgin olive oil, fish, grains, people who eat that sort of diet over a lifetime have less dementia or cognitive decline later in life. Yep. Yeah.
All right, Bob, thank you. Appreciate that.
Bob, sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, sorry to hear about it, but... This is the thing with this disease. We're not, there's no miracle cure. And as you said, for most forms of it, no treatment anyway. Malcolm from Broome. Hello, Malcolm.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Welcome from Broome. Yeah, I was probably sliding away a wee bit from the dementia to the cardiology side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the professor think that beetroot and aged garlic
do you have them together, Malcolm?
Well, I'm taking them together, with a dram of scotch, of course.
Yeah, of course. I was going to say. Hang on. How are you eating the beetroot?
Well, once upon a time, I thought beetroot came in cans, and then I realised, no, it's brilliant, roasted and what have you. Or you can get it in capsules and... The aged garlic, it's supposed to affect cholesterol levels.
Oh, so you're taking this you're taking this through capsules, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I now like roast beetroot too. And I'm trying to grow it.
Yeah. Good on you. I don't know, Henry, is there any research on it?
We I was involved with the University of Wollongong. Karen Charlton led a study looking at purple food as a protection against dementia, including beetroot. And there was certainly evidence from animal experiments and test tube experiments, and in one pilot study, that it may help prevent cognitive decline. Unfortunately, the study didn't show a benefit compared to a control group. So I think the evidence is not strong there. But beetroots are high in anthocyanins, which is a very potent antioxidant. Antioxidants have been associated with less cognitive decline and better health in general. I don't know about the benefits of garlic. In general, it's better to eat the foods than to take the supplements. So rather than taking fish oil supplements, eat fish.
Yeah.
Rather than taking beetroot capsules, roast the beetroots and eat them. They sound delicious.
It's pretty good raw and grated, actually, as well. 1-300-800-222. Malcolm, sorry to hear that there's no miracle. But this is the point. There is no miracle thing here, isn't there? But there are just modifiable risk factors. Just again, those ones in midlife: hearing loss, high cholesterol, depression, traumatic brain injury, physical inactivity, diabetes, smoking, hypertension, obesity, excessive alcohol consumption. So if you're in midlife and you want to, do something about it, because according to The Lancet, if you avoid or do something about these risk factors, it could potentially prevent or delay nearly 45% of dementia cases. Valerie from North Mackay. Hello, Valerie.
Good evening. look, I had half a thyroid taken out in 2001.
Mm.
Can you tell me what it's got to do with dementia?
Well, as long as your thyroid levels are normal, you're still either producing enough thyroxin or you've been given tablets to make sure your thyroid levels are normal. You should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I am taking a tablet. The only thing I've noticed is I'm coming up 90 and I'm starting to lose my voice. Does that have anything to do with the thyroid?
It depends. It can have if the operation damaged the nerve that affects the voice box.
Mm.
But if you had the operation long ago and only now losing your voice, it's probably unrelated.
Okay.
Thanks, Valerie.
Thank you.
Sorry, Jan, you've been waiting on there too. Jan from Coffs Harbour. Hi, Jan.
Good evening. Hello. My husband actually has Alzheimer's disease and went into a nursing home for respite care, and he was assessed by a neurologist, and he will no longer be able to come home. He's in permanent care, and he is degenerating rather rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he is in a bad way. He says to me, "I'm sorry." He said, "All of the words are in my brain, but I can't get them out."
And it's terrible.
He can be lucid. But most of the time, his conversation can be very weird and very odd.
Mm.
My question really is, how long does this disease persist? How long? What is the eventual outcome?
What's the prognosis going to be? Yeah. Henry?
Well, people, because all of us are going to die, but people with dementia will die sooner. Mm. Than people without dementia. It reduces lifespan. If you're 90 when you're developing dementia, then it might reduce your lifespan by a few months. If you're 60 when you develop dementia, it probably reduces your lifespan by decades.
Mm.
So the average lifespan of somebody with dementia varies between 5 and 10 years from onset. Some people live longer. Some sorts of dementia are associated with much more rapid decline. It's quite variable and depends on the person's age and their general health condition as well.
Mm.
Yes, yeah. He is 87 and had lived a very, very healthy lifestyle, good diet, swimming most days, And then all of a sudden the memory loss started. And it's been over a period of 2 years maybe, but he's been in permanent care, unable to come home for the last 6 months.
6 months,
and,
So you have to think about what's the average lifespan of an 87-year-old man. It's probably about 4 years. I'm guessing. I don't know the exact figure.
Mm.
And for him, it may be less than that, but not much.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So it'll just slowly, he will just slowly
He'll slowly progress,
It's a very nasty, sad disease, but anyway.
Look, it's a disease people fear more than any other disease.
Mm.
Yes.
More than cancer, more than heart disease, people. We worry that we won't have our independence, our autonomy. That your husband sounds like a wonderful man, but he feels he's worried that he's a burden on you, and he says, "I'm sorry." How touching is that?
I managed with him for about 18 months. We'd been married for 65 years, and it's just been the last two and a half years where it's been very trying.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, Jan. Sorry.
Of course, it's not just one person's illness. They say he has dementia or Alzheimer's, but you or the family suffer with it too. Mm. So the carer, we know the carers have greater depression, physical health suffers, financially it's stressful. So it's a stone into a pool, but the ripples spread.
Mm. All right, Jan, thank you. Sorry to hear it, and all the best. All right, look, time has beaten us. If just in summary here, those risk factors that we've read out, if any of them apply to you, then you can do something about it, and you should. I mean, you should anyway. In terms of health, someone says, "What's midlife? I'm 64. Is that midlife?"
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you've got another year to go.
That's right. Mark from Traralgon says, why does dementia result in leaving the stove on? That's when it gets risky. Well, that's true. I guess. Just one thing. Is it some people have said to me, if you're up to it, you can fool the GP with the dementia test.
Oh, yes. I've got patients who come in. They study before they come.
They study the test.
Questions are going to ask.
Because it's out on the internet and so on.
Yeah.
So,
and it's like at school, people used to write the answers on their hand.
Yeah. Like that. You can fool some of the GP some of the time, but not all the time, I presume.
So, I know exactly what's happening when somebody comes in. And if I ask them what the date is, They very proudly will rattle it off because they know that's what I was going to ask. But I can trick them.
I know my poor old father. I know the doctor used to trick him because he'd say, "Draw me a picture of a house." Jeff, he'd say, and he'd put it on a piece of bone. Dad would draw a little, kids type caricature of a house, and he'd give it back to the doctor, and then the doctor would put it in a drawer. And then he'd talk to him for the next 20 minutes during his consultation. At the end of the consultation, he'd say, "What did you draw in that piece of paper?"
Yes.
Dad used to get so angry. He would say, "That bastard, he knows what I drew." But of course, he couldn't. Hmm. So, there's not a lot of point in trying to fool the doctor, I imagine.
No. Can I just mention that people want to see more of our research? We have a website that's... Yep. Centre for Healthy Brain Ageing, UNSW.
What is it?
Center? So it's CHEBA, C-H-E-B-A.
C-H-E-B-A.
Yeah, .unsw.edu.au.
Okay. All right, CHEBA.UNSW.edu.au.
And Dementia Australia also has a terrific website. You can find that on Google.
Yeah. That's www.dementia.org.au. Thanks, Henry. That's right. Good on you.
Thanks, everyone.
Really appreciate your time.
Questions.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.